So I'm really, really, really excited that I've been invited back to give this talk. I think everything's going to go great, but I got a new video that came in the car right over that I managed to, I think, embed. It's pretty amazing new stuff. But let me move on from here. So here's a quiz that I found from Australia. Let's see. Which do you think of those two is real? Trump or Obama? Okay, good job. Okay, now what about this one? Guy or girl? You guys are good. Okay, this one? They're both real. Okay, this one? Actually, Putin is real. Okay. So from your on the left is the fake one. Okay? So even if you guess correctly, right, on those videos, it's pretty amazing, and it's turning into a very difficult period in which we're trying to analyze videos, right? Let me show you this.
It got me thinking about my full-time employees and their ability to survive on $8 an hour in New York City. And foremost in all of our minds has been the loss and the grief felt by the people of Orlando. Most of us don't get our health care through the marketplace. We get it through our job or through Medicare or Medicaid. And what you should know is that thanks to the Affordable Care Act, your coverage is better today than it was before. Women can get free checkups, and you can't get charged more just for being a woman. To give his employees came together to pass a common... There's a bill that would boost America's very, very hard times.
Some progress, at least within the small confines of the legal community. I think it's real important.
Here we go. President Barack Obama, when you're giving a speech, make sure you use a lot of pauses.
America's businesses have created 14.5 million new jobs over 75 straight months.
We're developing technology. Every technology can be used in some negative way, and so we all should work towards making sure that it's not going to happen. And even one of the interesting directions is that once you know how to create something, you know how to reverse engineer it. And so you can, create methods for identifying edited videos versus real videos.
So even as we know that this is, you know, going on, that one's fake and one's real, it just is a really powerful moment of us trying to figure out what and how this is going and where. So this is a guy from USC who's created a system he called Pinscreen, and he uses just one image to start making fake videos.
Time and money, and can create the most realistic computer-generated characters. Think of young Princess Leia's appearance in last year's Rogue One. But what if smartphone users had the same power at their fingertips? Today, researchers are developing software that harnesses artificial intelligence to generate lifelike but fake footage.
You see on the right,
startups
the
like
left
Ali's
is
Pinscreen
one
only need
photograph.
One selfie to start modeling the facial features of a video avatar that can make you look like a video game character or like a real-life person. Pinscreen.
Now let me show you what I just picked up from Samsung.
We present a system that
and
can
how
learn
this is
realistic
working.
Talking head models. Notably, learning of a new head model requires just a handful of images. In this example, the model was learned from 8 frames. Once a talking head model was learned, it can be driven by the positions of the face landmarks. In this case, we extract landmarks by running an off-the-shelf face landmark tracker on a different video of the same person. Effectively, the learned model serves as a realistic avatar of a person.
Couple of pictures.
Our talking head models work well, even for new view angles.
Couple of photographs and you can become
examples.
A puppet. Your photograph.
Our system can learn from
puppet.
Different numbers of frames. One shot learning from a single
one
frame is possible.
Shot from a single frame.
Of course,
frame.
Increasing the number of frames leads to head models of higher realism and to better identity preservation.
I love the music that's had to put in here. Very
I'll
soothing, right? When it's totally terrifying, right? So, but I think that the researcher got it right, the very first feature, by indicating that we have to understand how these things are made to figure out where are we going to start putting identity markers and how are we going to figure out how do we do some sort of digital print that still protects sources. And I think that's something that's really we can discuss a little bit further. But so, you know, major AI pioneers are talking about the dangers of abuses being real. They worry about, like, drones, not only for security, but, of course, you know, any kind of authoritarian government using it for military purposes. But AI can be used by power to keep power, and it amplifies discrimination and biases. So take, for example, this Amazon AI, okay? They couldn't understand why their recruiting tool was getting so many men and not women. And what they finally realized was that men were putting the words capture and execute on their resumes and women weren't. And the AI was looking for the words capture and execute. So Amazon was busily hiring guys until they realized that it was just this terminology that, you know, who knows how word of mouth resumes get shared and how we build resumes, but capture and execute were not terms that women were using, and Amazon was not hiring women because of it. So one of the things that I do is actually the reverse, using recreation for real stories, right? So one of my earliest pieces that I did was to take Guantanamo Bay Prison, which I'd worked a documentary, I'd done a big piece on, and with a big grant from the MacArthur Foundation, we created a virtual accessible Guantanamo Bay Prison, in contrast to the inaccessible camp where no journalists or anybody could go to. It was originally built in Second Life in 2007, and I rebuilt it when I was invited to the Moscow Museum of Modern Art as an installation in 2013. This gives you an idea of the source material that we were using. This was the photograph that was smuggled out by a U.S. soldier, and this is what you would give up control of your avatar in this experience to nobody would like to be brought to the space.
As soon as I had put on my orange jumpsuit, I was thrown into the back of a C-17 transport plane, and
you are immediately bound, and then a black hood comes over the vision of your avatar.
Shut up!
We then integrated some sounds that were based on descriptions of what real detainees heard. When the black hood is removed, you find that you're in a cage. Most of the footage is from original Defense Department shots of detainees in Guantanamo Bay.
A replica of Camp Delta will be added to this camp, X-Ray, soon. Noni wants it to include a habeas corpus game, enhancing the simulation of a place outside of the law.
We didn't did that, and the thing about that was when you were in that cage in that cell, you could say, hey, can I call my family? And the guard would respond, I'm sorry, you can't call your family. Oh, can I call my lawyer? No, you can't call your lawyer. And, what's the charges against me? I'm sorry, I don't have that information. And the idea was to use a virtual space, a virtual gaming space, to offer literally lessons on loss of habeas corpus rights. I was working as a research fellow at that time at USC, and the students also decided to do this piece. This is back in, we published this in 2010, so this is quite a while now. Like, how do you do web journalism, photos, videos, et cetera, et cetera? But I decided I wanted to go from this Gitmo project to doing more virtual reality for telling news stories. And none of the students were interested in VR at the time, and I found an intern who was a friend of mine's daughter who had just graduated from high school, and we started recording audio at food banks because there were no GoPro cameras yet, until we recorded a day where a man with diabetes who was waiting in a long line for food, this photograph, he actually dropped into a diabetic coma, and because his blood sugar got too low, he just didn't get food in time, and she came back with that audio. And I decided to rebuild with that. It was so intense. And this is how I did it. We had to put on motion capture suit to track every character. I had no budget. I built this for $700. People were like, you're going to do what in virtual reality? News stories? That's crazy. I mean, I'm a former correspondent for Newsweek magazine. I've written for the New York Times, so I had a little bit of credibility, but they still thought it was nuts. So we spent all night, and this guy had to be every character in that line, kid, food bank lady, everybody. Working out of a USC system. And this was the piece that ended up coming out. This was how it was put together. That photograph of that street, or the actual street on Westmoreland in Vermont. Most everything else is digitally recreated, obviously. But what was amazing was how people were reacting to this. So these were our big, huge goggles and big cables. That's actually Alejandro González Iñárritu, the director. This is my introducing him to VR. But as you can see, he's trying not to step on the body. He's there in the room, even though he's got can see on either side. He's watching the woman on the cell phone, right? So that piece got into the Sundance Film Festival in 2012. It was the very first VR piece ever invited to Sundance. And I had no idea how people were going to react. And we had these huge, big goggles, right? They were $50,000 a pair. And the head of the lab was like, you're not taking those anywhere. I was like, oh, really? So we had to make goggles. And this is us trying to do something. Those little black dots are called the IPDs, like where your eye is, your eyeballs are. Well, that guy's got a great big fat head, and I have a really skinny head, and we're fighting over how the thing should work. But we showed up with something that looked like this. And this was opening night at Sundance. So as you can see, she's actually down on the ground with the seizure victim again. She's upset. She ends up trying to talk to him, right? You might recognize her also opening night at Sundance.
So what'd you think? Oh, you're crying. You're crying. Gina, you're crying.
I had no idea how people were going to react. And yet, over and over again, people try to talk to him, try to comfort him. It was pretty crazy, right? And here's the thing. People's minds put in information into these scenes. So I had some people say to me, like, you heard me, $700, right, I made this for. So most of those characters were either donated or I bought them online. I mean, I literally had no money. And people would say things to me like, oh, man, I could tell that that was a, you know, guy was a seizure victim because his knees were scraped up from falling so much. Or this woman in the orange, in the red-orange outfit, somebody in the chaos tried to steal food, and so she was the character who played that audio capture. And like, oh, I could tell she was a heroin addict because of the you know, the needle marks on her arms. And like, people make stuff up, right? This is, by the way, the Virgin Mary in the tortilla. I'm sure you guys can see it. Got a lot of press, right? I mean, people can see things. It's sort of interesting what our minds bring to this, and you can't discount that. So deep fakes are already here among us. They're using commerce. How many of you are afraid of know Lil Miquela? So this is a complete fake Instagram account. She's worth $125 million wearing clothing in this fake character. Fun and entertainment. This was the latest Dumbo. Of course, we've seen this a lot, right? Very beautiful. And even love. This guy got engaged to a hologram to get married. And I was searching for it. It was like, Kondo's mother refused an invitation to her only son's wedding in Tokyo this month. But perhaps it isn't such a surprise he was marrying a hologram. So, but can these recreations actually, these fakes that I've been making, lead us closer to truth? I talk a little bit about that habeas corpus issue. Oh, whoops, come back. So let me show you what this is. This is photogrammetry. How many people are familiar with photogrammetry? A few of you out there. So on the left, what that is a photograph going click, 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 click. And the big thing is the digital algorithmically stitched together model that comes from those photographs. This one's not even cleaned up. You see a little bit of those artifacts, right? So how did I use this? I was invited by a bipartisan committee to help for the establishment of a women's history museum. And I really wanted to do a story about this amazing revolutionary era publisher named Mary Catherine Goddard, who's also a printer. And she ended up being invited to print the first official Declaration of Independence when the guys finally all signed their name, because before they weren't putting their name on it because it was treason. And if you look at the very bottom of there, I don't know if my light can show you, but right there at the bottom, I'll go to this side now. She actually put her full name, Mary Catherine Goddard. It was the only time she'd ever put her full name on anything she'd published. She basically signed the Declaration of Independence. And then when she died, she freed her slave and left her all of her money. She was a pretty amazing woman. But again, with no budget, how do you create a revolutionary era, God, I'm having trouble with that this afternoon, printing press. Well, we found in historic Deerfield that they had one already redone. So what we had to do then is go in and do the photographs, click, 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 of every single anything. If you want to get underneath that, you have to take a photograph. If you want to paint a table all red, you got to paint underneath. That's the same with photogrammetry. You make sure you take a photograph of every section. And then we were able to use character reproduction, now called videogrammetry, and actually put you on scene in that printing press room with her. And I used her words that we found in her newspapers pretty much to do the dialogue. This also, what you're looking at here, is a photogrammetry representation of a solitary confinement cell. So that is not a video. That's somebody, we're capturing this from somebody walking around. And I had somebody from Realities.io, a guy locked in there by the prison warden in Maine for 3 hours. And he had to take photographs of every inch of that solitary confinement cell so that you could walk around it. This is for a piece in partnership with PBS Frontline. I would say for somebody, that's a pretty high standard, right? And we then brought a guy who spent 4.5 years in that solitary down to the stage to capture him in full volume. You have to use many, many cameras to capture a videogrammetry character in order to get somebody in video from every angle. And this is a little trailer from that.
When I walked into my cell, I didn't realize that I would be spending 5.5 years of my life in solitary confinement. I look fine, but I'm not. 18 years old, I was new to the system, never really been in trouble before. As an adult, the solitary confinement and the sensory deprivation, years of it, drove a relatively sane young man insane. Cut myself thousands of times, just
when you're in that room with him, you really understand how small it is. So what about climate change? So this was a picture sent to me by a friend of ours who's a quantum physicist. And he was at the most huge quantum physics meeting. And there was absolutely, you know, there was a thing on the billing saying that there was a science policy a meeting, but nobody showed up. There was not a speaker, nothing, right? So, like, this is an issue, right? If we're not dealing even with some of the science around climate change, how are we going to get people to understand this more deeply? So, again, with Frontline and PBS, we built something to, this is the trailer for it, to help you understand this a little better. We clamped that big camera to the edge of this helicopter. We flew over the glaciers. You can turn it up.
How could it possibly go away?
The glacier retreated more in the last 15 years than in the previous 70 years. We'd like to know why.
So we put you underwater, right, which you can't really do in any other medium, to start understanding the warming of the ocean currents, right? So as you can see, that's the camera clamped in. And then this was what you experience inside the helicopter that we reproduce digitally. Very interesting ethical questions come up, like, as you see, there's no pilot. But with Frontline and PBS and with Nova, who we're doing this partnership with, like, but there was, we can't really put a fake pilot in a fake helicopter. What do you do, right? It's super interesting questions as we start to understand what does it mean to do embodied journalism, embodied news stories. But now you feel like you're flying over Greenland and you start to understand it. Of course, when you work with partners like this, some of the technology is new technology for them. And they actually sent us some flat photographs. We needed photographs like the photogrammetry. So we had to rebuild this in ZBrush ourselves by hand. As you can see, this is us dimensionalizing a flat photograph. So this is part of the technology and how you do this. And then you are able to stand with the scientists there. But I think the thing that I you know, and like I said, underwater, I think that we did some studies around this, and both the solitary confinement thing and this piece were best conveyed in the embodied form, not in a flat photograph, not in a flat video. But when you put people on scene and you let them walk around that cell, when you put them on the side of a glacier in a boat while it's receding in front of you, you understand. How else can you convey the magnitude of what's going on unless people are there? So we found that this was a very successful endeavor. And the best part about it is that it demystifies the science. If you could be on scene with these guys in their boats, et cetera, like we have them up in an airplane, there's one point where the guy is dropping a temperature in a tube, sorry, a thermometer in a tube, down basically right next to the back of the toilet, right? It's like in a little area next to the toilet. And you're like, oh, I could drop a thermometer back from the back of an airplane and measure ocean temperatures. It's not some guys hiding in a cubby hole just making up information. And I think that's really what's important. So this is something to make it a lot easier. Whoops, I'm going to go back. That should be a video. It's not going to play. All right, I'm just going to give you an idea what this is. Very quickly. We've built this new system. Is that going to play? It's not playing, huh? All right, maybe the video's not working. Doesn't matter. We built something called beta.reach.love. Reach.love, actually, Engadget just picked up a story on it yesterday, just to make it a lot easier for people to start making photo real experiences. And here's a quick trailer so you understand it. I guess the piece isn't going to run. I just want you to see that this is something that's coming, and we're providing some tools for it.
The first web platform for creating and sharing volumetric VR using real people and places. Built by the pioneers at Emblematic Group, Reach is an easy-to-use, browser-based solution that makes the power of walk-around VR available to anyone. Reach lets you craft your own volumetric stories in three easy steps using a simple drag-and-drop interface. First, you access a library of 3D locations, many then captured using stunning high-resolution photogrammetry. You can also upload locations you have created yourself. Then, use our simple tool to add your own real-life video interviews, volumetric characters, or 3D assets. Finally, you can share the results via a simple web link. No need for downloads or dedicated apps. Reach eliminates all the distribution barriers facing room-scale VR. Viewers can navigate stories on a smartphone, tablet, or PC, or put on a headset and walk around for full immersion. Sign up now to discover how far...
So we're literally just launching this, right? But it's just to give you an idea that volumetric content, walk-around, full embedded content... Sorry, I really should... Whatever. I'll move on to this slide. It's coming. It's coming. And we've already gotten rid of a lot of the hurdles. So, like, start thinking about those deep fake videos and all this stuff because this is happening. And it's good, too. It's not all bad. I agree that some of it's pretty scary. But, okay, how many of you know about the bystander effect? You've all heard about it, right? It's real, right? 37 people didn't call the police, saw this woman, Kitty Genovese, get murdered, blah, 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 blah. So I got first introduced to VR by this research team, Mel Slater and Maria Sanchez-Vives. They were doing a piece to recreate bystander studies. And they couldn't use, you know, put you on a real scene, so they used a VR scene where you walk in a bar and this guy in the, you know, white is drunk and the guy in the red is in the wrong football jersey and he goes to attack him. And I remember being in that scene and being fully embodied and trying to get in there. That was the first time where I was like, oh my God, I can never build for my audience to be out there. They have to be in the story with me. But here's the interesting thing. After they came out and showed that in fact, more people try to help in this situation than not help. If I stop you from trying to help, then all hell breaks loose. But what they basically found was the opposite. And after that had happened, the New York Times came out with this, which said the portrayal of 38 witnesses was erroneous, the article grossly exaggerated, et cetera, et cetera. So interesting, once again, VR gets to some truth rather than the other way around. And we also have had these issues with photographs for a while. This is with Hillary Clinton in the room, Secretary of State, when Osama bin Laden was assassinated, and a number of newspapers actually photoshopped her out. You see the two women are gone in the Middle East because women, of course, can't be in the same room with men. And here's a really interesting article. I think you can go to the Daily Dot and you can find the fake news sites. So if you need some time to try to educate people, and this is super important, like if you need to educate kids and stuff because middle schoolers can't distinguish between an ad labeled sponsored content and real material. a lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes. In fact, it's a lie that Mark Twain said that. But it's not a lie. So, in fact, MIT researchers have found that rumors are spread a gazillion times faster than truth. And that people just seem to go straight into the false news categories, right? So I've been on this Aspen Institute and Knight Foundation Commission on trust, media, and democracy, and trust in American institutions has fallen to troubling lows, right? Without trust, democracy cannot function. We have to believe in our institutions. Anti-Semitic incidents have risen. There's also a bunch of hate crime data. Things are up. And I don't believe we're meant to be this way. I truly believe that kindness can prevail, and that's how I've been using this material, even if it's fake, and only sort of. And what do I mean by that? So I don't know if you saw this great article in the New York Times about the placebo effect. Well, if people administer the placebo effect with kindness, with hugs, interest, and affection and love, it works way better. Kindness actually cures. Think about that. So in conclusion, trust your world, but try to verify it. Try to figure out the sources. I literally filed my PhD dissertation on Monday. Whew. And I have a full chapter thinking about transparency in embodied nature. And I think that's gonna be important. We have to figure out really good ways to say, where does it come from, right? Where does our data come from? Where are our sources? Who are we capturing, et cetera, et cetera? Think before you share. Take that breather. That's anything you can teach your colleagues, your children, whoever. Think before you share. It's important. And instead, spread goodwill. It really can help battle disinformation. Thank you so much. I think I've got time for questions.
Thank you so much, Nani.